I'm John Kroll. This week is School Choice Week. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk not just about what's going on during School Choice Week, but we're also going to talk about the concept of school choice, what it is, what it seeks to do, and what it's accomplished so far. My guests will be Tasha Spalliers of the Institute for Quality Education and Robert Enlow of the Friedman Foundation for Educational Choice. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about National School Choice Week. Indiana, as you probably know, has one of the most extensive school choice initiatives in the nation. If not the most extensive. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Tasha Spalliers of the Institute for Quality Education and returning, I think, is this your third or your fourth time, Robert Enlow of the Friedman Foundation for Educational Choice. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you both here. Why don't we start first by talking about what School Choice Week is? Tasha, I'll throw that one to you first.
Sure. So School Choice Week is a national celebration that allows supporters of school choice to come together in all different kinds of ways just to support the or to celebrate the fact that we do have a choice to choose the best school for our child. It's a nonpartisan, nonpolitical public awareness effort happening all over the country all week long.
And what are some of the events here in Indiana?
So we're really excited this afternoon, actually. I'll be driving quickly, but not over the speed limit, to Fort Wayne. We are participating in a rally at 4 o'clock at IPFW. It's a rally to support school choice there. They're expecting a few hundred supporters, and so we're excited to be involved in that. And then the Institute for Quality Education is also hosting a movie screening this weekend in Bloomington. We're screening the documentary The Ticket, which is about school choice and the emergence of school choice all throughout the country. So those are just a couple of events that we're participating in. But the folks at National School Choice Week are telling us there are nearly 300 events registered throughout the state of Indiana.
And Robert, what makes Indiana is, you know, one of the hubs, really, for school choice, if not the hub.
Sure.
In the nation. What made Indiana sort of ground zero, I guess, for the school choice movement?
Well, so I think what's made Indiana ground zero is the multiplicity of options that families can choose from. So The fact we have so many good magnet schools inside our school districts, the fact we have charter schools, the fact we have now access to private schools using public dollars, parents now have this incredible opportunity to choose from whatever system works best for them. And it's put Indiana at the head of the class, there's no doubt. You know, we have more growth in charter schools than almost any state in the country, certainly per our size. The fastest growing scholarship program, really great work that's happening in IPS to change its structures to allow for 1321 schools, which are partnership schools. There's just a whole host of things operating to allow parents greater freedoms and school systems more flexibility.
And make the case real quickly for why choice is important, school choice is important for education.
So I think the first and most important thing is your child's zip code and your family's income should not determine the quality of education you receive. We should stop thinking about schooling based on where you live and start thinking about schooling based on what your child needs, whether that's provided by a public school, a charter school, or at home. So I think school choice at its heart is to try and separate this idea of where you live and what your schooling has to be.
So, but in terms of that, what's the argument then for saying, well, a public school should be able to provide for all of those children's needs?
Sure, and I think we want to make sure schools provide educational opportunities for all families. You know, one size doesn't fit all in anything, right? We know that. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of public schools that do a fantastic job. There are a lot of charter schools and private schools, and there are a lot of schools that don't do a good job on either sector, right? The goal is to drive the resources towards quality, to drive it towards options, to make sure that we have a personalized education that every child can benefit from. And, you know, what works for my child, let's say, in Washington Township for one of them may not work, right? It may be better for them to go to a Catholic school or Heron Charter School, for example, or Carpe Diem or something like that. The fact that I now have those options as a parent really improves the outcomes for my children and I think lifts society as a whole.
We are talking about school choice in celebration of and acknowledgement of National School Choice Week. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. And I should say this program is part of our ongoing conversation, as part of the American Graduate Initiative. WFYI is a partner in the National American Graduate Initiative, which is funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. American Graduate shines a spotlight on the policies and practices that help children achieve success from their earliest preschool days through high school graduation and transition to college and careers. You can learn more about it at americangraduate.org. So we've established that outcomes are important in this. What is the evidence that we have seen that it is working? Tasha, I'll throw that one to you.
Yeah, so I think we can think about that in two different ways. You know, the first way we can think of it in terms of data, right? So looking at student data to see how well the kids are performing if they're choosing different options. We know that, you know, let's take Indiana's voucher program, for example. Although it's one of the largest and the fastest growing in the country, it's still really new. And so we are anxious to get some data that shows us how well these students are doing when they're moving from their traditional public to a non-public school with a voucher. But we're just not there yet. So, but that data will be coming, and once the program has a chance to kind of get more established, we'll be able to dive into that and hopefully find some really good news that these schools are providing a good quality education for these families. But then, you know, the other half of that is we can look at it and say, you know, I'll give you an example of a mom I met recently in my community, high-performing school district. Her daughter has medical issues. A daughter that was doing well in a public school district has medical issues, and they've decided to use a blended learning approach for her daughter. So she's going to the traditional public school part of the day. She's doing some online courses, some private tutoring, and they found this really fun mix of educational experiences that work for her. And so that's an example of school choice. And I think if you ask that mom if school choice was working, she'd say absolutely yes. Her daughter has never felt better and never has never been performing better in school.
We've gotten a Facebook comment from a listener named Michael. And if you'd like to reach out to us via Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Says, as with most Republican efforts to privatize government, the issue of school choice is just more transfer of taxpayer dollars meant for public education to their cronies and campaign investors in the for-profit school business. Robert, you're shaking your head. I'm going to let you have a chance to respond to Michael.
I appreciate that. One of the things I like about National School Choice Week is the fact that it's a celebration of all types of schools and all quality. You know, if you're looking through some of the events, it's the Child Development Center down in Indianapolis. It's the Montessori School in Bartersville. It's the John Paul Catholic School in Terre Haute. It's the homeschoolers in Seymour. It's a whole panoply of options. That's one of the things I like about School Choice Week. And one of the tragedies about this argument about school choice is that it's become so partisan. You know, the fact is all private schools in this state are nonprofits, right? They have to be nonprofits by the state law. So I don't think this is about privatizing. I think the focus here is what's best for kids. And you asked earlier, how do we know it's working? We can talk about the data, and I love numbers, John. But I think it's working because of this. The public-to-public school transfers is the largest program in the state. It's got 35,000 kids going from one public school district to another because parents want different options. The voucher program has got 30,000 kids in it in 3 years. Charter schools have 70,000 kids in it. Magnet schools are growing off the charts. One way to show that it's working is parents are asking for it.
But let me ask, and this I think gets to Tasha's point, that there still isn't a lot of data. And I think, Michael, I hope I'm not taking your question in areas that, or your comment in areas that you don't anticipate. If I do, please feel free to call me to account for that and jump back into the conversation. But how damaging was it, obviously, the whole episode with former state superintendent of public instruction, Tony Bennett, you know, altering, for whatever reason, a charter school's grade to this whole process, because it did seem to call into question the issue of accountability all the way across the system. Robert, I'll let you have first crack, but Tasha, you get to go next.
I think the tragedy is it politicized an issue that shouldn't be politicized. And it's unfortunate that happened. Look, regardless of what you think happened or what we know happened, Dr. Bennett has been cleared by the IG at this point. The fact, however, is we need to stop focusing on the politics and start focusing on what works for kids. And I get the point that it might be damaging, and that's unfortunate because kids are suffering as a result of that. And we know in the scholarship program, here's the thing I'd like to say. If a private school is in the program and they receive a D or F for any 2 years in a row, they cannot take new students on scholarships the third year until they get the grade up. To me, that's real accountability for outcomes and performance. They have to prove that they're performing on a test, and they have to prove it over time. And so we had schools, there were seven schools last year that got on that list. Five of them got off this year because they wanted to improve themselves, and they did improve themselves. So, you know, I think the politicization of this issue is probably one of the most tragic things that I've ever seen in Indiana. And it's unfortunate because it doesn't happen that way across the country. You look at Florida, half of the Black caucus and all of the Hispanic caucus support school choice. You look at Chicago, Rahm Emanuel is now talking about school choice. You look at D.C., the majority of support is coming from Democrats. Governor Cuomo, in New York City says he supports school choice.
Yeah, that's the
choice.
Mario.
Yeah,
that's
so, yeah. I mean, the fact is this shouldn't be partisan, and it shouldn't be about politics, and it shouldn't be about privatization.
Tasha, I'm going to give you a crack at it, too.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what Robert had to say. And, you know, I think we find often that opponents of school choice or opponents of school accountability, if you will, are looking for reasons to say, see, this whole thing just doesn't work. Let's just throw it all out. You know, but what I would tell you, John, is that by every measure, student achievement is up in Indiana. So to say accountability doesn't work just doesn't make sense. More kids are graduating from high school than ever before. More kids are reading on grade level in third grade. More kids are passing the ISTEP exams. More kids are taking AP courses and getting credit for them. So, you know, student achievement is up by every measure, and accountability works.
But to be fair to the folks who were concerned about that, their argument was the accountability ought to be across the board here, that you can't exempt schools that for whatever reason you like from that standard or from the grade. That seemed to be the real issue here, and particularly since there were a couple of traditional public schools that had the same failing whose grades weren't altered.
And I think you'll find, I mean, we're still having very similar conversations. We've found, you know, grading schools is not easy. You know, we've gone from a 4-point grading scale to a 100-point grading scale, and we're still not really sure where it's going to end. So, you know,
Well, there's always 1,000 after that.
Nothing like grade inflation, right?
Yeah. So it's hard. It's difficult. You know, what educators do is hard work, and how finding a framework to define quality and to hold them accountable, it's It's hard.
And I would only add, I know we're wrapping, coming to a close, but, you know, maybe it's me. This is the 21st century. We can find multiple levels of accountability and multiple levels of reporting and differentiated reporting for different types of environments. And does that mean you want to advantage private schools or charter schools? No. And in fact, as I understand, more public schools got their grade changed than charter schools during that whole conversation with Dr. Bennett, but that's often lost. The goal here is we need an accountability system that works for children, not systems.
We are talking about school choice here in acknowledgement of National School Choice Week. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Tasha Solliers of the Institute for Quality Education and Robert Enlow of the Freedom Foundation for Educational Choice. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about school choice in acknowledgement of National School Choice Week. And my guests are Tasha Solliers of the Institute for Quality Education and Robert Enlow of the Freedom Foundation for Educational Choice. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly.
My question was in regard to... I would like Tasha and Robert to speak to how our public schools are being gutted by the voucher system, and also how the ability of the voucher schools to accept or not accept especially handicapped kids, and how the public schools dynamic is not represented in the voucher schools.
Thanks very much for the call, and that's several questions, but yeah. we'll try to get at them. Thanks very much, Ryan. All right, who wants that one first? Tasha?
Okay. Yeah, you're right. There's several questions there. We'll start with, I think the caller mentioned that the voucher system is gutting public schools. And, you know, let's just look at the numbers. Fewer than 2% of our students across Indiana attend a voucher school. So while our program is one of the largest in the country, we're still talking about a really small percentage of kids that are taking advantage of that opportunity. And then when you look at the finances behind the voucher program, right now in grades 1 through 8, a voucher amount is capped at $4,800. So it will always be less for the state to pay for that child to attend a voucher school of their choice than the state would have paid for that child to attend the traditional public school that they're assigned to. So I'm not sure exactly what he meant by that comment, but I think when we look at the numbers and the enrollment, the voucher program is certainly not harming the public schools in any way.
How much of this is an issue? You know, we've talked about, and Robert has spoken eloquently about attempting to depoliticize this discussion. How much of that would be effective if we stopped, if you could attack the perception that this is a zero-sum game? If we just expanded education funding overall across the board, so that it didn't seem like to people that that public schools were, traditional public schools were getting a smaller slice of the pie.
Yeah, so that's a great way to look at it. And frankly, I would love to fund every child based on what every child needs to go to whatever school works best for them. You know, I think the key thing about school choice is it's about children and families, not systems. And I believe in a publicly funded education system. I think we constitutionally have to support that. That doesn't mean that we have to have simply a single monolithic system of providing that education. I mean, ultimately what we want is a diverse system of educational options that works for kids. And we should fund it to its level that it needs to be funded. I think one of the problems that some people have with school choices, and in particular now, is we're talking about a funding formula that now includes the choice program. And people feel like it's a competitive environment. And I understand the difficulties of that, but sometimes that's a good thing. That changes the dynamic.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Blake And if you would like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Blake says nonprofit status is a tax designation that defines the structure of the organization. Nonprofits are just as susceptible to corruption and poor management as their public and corporate counterparts. Saying an organization is beyond reproach because it's not-for-profit is lazy and suspicious. I don't think that, to be fair, Blake, I don't think that's what Robert was saying, but I'm going to let him speak in his own
words. No, I think that's it. Blake's point is really well taken, because the answer is, I mean, I said that in response to someone saying a privatization equals for-profit. All the schools are nonprofit. Mm. Blake is absolutely right. It doesn't matter how you're legally designated, whether you're a public school or you're a nonprofit or you're a for-profit. Corruption can happen at all levels, right? And that's why you need a focus that's on kids, not systems. We did some work recently, a few years ago, saying what are the perceptions of fraud and misconduct in public and private schools? And as you might imagine, they're proportional to the number of students that are in the schools.
Is that in that refrain too? I hear one of the causes of conflict, because both sides, you know, in the debate over school choice, will say they are defending the interests of kids.
Yep.
And that is their motivation. And having covered this for years, I have no reason to doubt either side on that. That really there is a focus. Does that? I guess where I'm trying to go with that question is, by saying design the system so it focuses on kids, doesn't that kind of exacerbate the tension, because it implies that the other side isn't focused?
No, and I appreciate that point. And that's, I think what I mean when I say that is, look, money matters, right? Mm-hmm. And this is about where the money flows and how the money flows. What we would like to see is a system where parents have the power over the money, where your home price doesn't determine the quality of school you have, where your zip code doesn't determine whether you can succeed or not often. And demography is not destiny. But what we're talking about here is who controls the money. And frankly, as someone who, as you know, was a former liberation theologian by training, a left winger, money matters. And I think one of the reasons people respond so negatively about this is because when I say it's about children, it's not system, to me it's really about giving parents the power and not the system the power.
We are talking about school choice here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Marjorie, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I grew up in Fort Wayne, and we had a great public school system. I live down here in Indy now. I have a granddaughter who started school. Her parents, wanted to choose a magnet school. She did not get into that. So then, of course, she tried one of the public schools. Unfortunately, it really couldn't meet her needs. She would be like in a gifted and talented program if they had any. So her parents were forced to look around and see, what could they choose? Well, there was no good choice available. I mean, so all this talk about parents' power, why don't we just go ahead and put all the money into the public schools and get back to having really, really good public school systems like I was used to?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Marjorie. Tasha.
Yeah, so, I can identify with what she's talking about. I live in a community where I wish there were more choices, too. When I look around and I think, I don't know if, there are the choices that I'd like to see for my family. However, I disagree that, the answer is pouring all of the money into one type of system. As Robert said so well earlier, one size doesn't fit all. And there's a reason why parents are wanting choices. No one chooses a school because they're happy with where they are, right? So there has to be something wrong with the system in the first place for those parents to want to look outside of that system to find new opportunities. So, you know, I think that the answer I would say would be growing choices, not banking on just one type of school for every child.
Robert,
you know,
want to
and
crack
Marjorie,
at that too.
I appreciate that. I went to public school way back in the day, and it worked well for me. You know, back then there were a lot more school districts than there are now, so there's a little bit more options. But one thing that's different is there are differences in our kids, right? Generational differences. Kids are plugged in. I mean, you know how my kids learn, even though they go to some really good schools? They get on YouTube, and they learn everything. When they have a math problem, they go to the Khan Academy, which is online, and walks them through all the math problems. We have a really different structure of how kids are learning nowadays. And thinking about it in the way of just funding a system is really thinking about having an 8-track in a CD world. Right, we've got to think about what this modern world looks like and how kids are learning, and they're learning, they're iPad learning, and 2-year-olds are iPad learning, and they're learning way faster than we ever did. And so we need to work on a system of funding that supports that, not a system of schools.
Gotten a tweet from a listener named Avery. If you'd like to reach out to us on Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. Avery says, "So we know, and no is capitalized, school choice is working. Definitively, but we still need to study preschool. Aren't parents asking, and again, all capitals, for that?"
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think we should be talking about a system where we have dollars following kids from the beginning of their education through the end of high school. You know, there are some of us who also believe you need to have some skin in the game as well. Mm-hmm. That's important. But we need to make sure there's dollars following kids. And we actually have a preschool system previously where privates and publics are working together. And they've mm-hmm. been working together for a long time using public dollars. And there's no complaint about that often. Mm-hmm. Right. So we can have that same system in K-12 that we have in pre-K that we have in K-12. I'd like to see that all the way where parents have multiple options.
What do you mean when you say you need to have skin in the game?
Well, so you know, I think about it this way. When I was growing up, my mom gave me a bicycle for a birthday, and I actually have a picture of that bicycle a year later. And you might imagine I just was given it as a gift. I didn't treat it very well. It's rusty. It was all beat up. The next one, I said, "I need another bike, Mom." She says, "Well, I'm not going to give it to you. You're going to have to put some money into it yourself, but I'll pay for some of it." And so I did, and guess what? I have a picture of that bike as well a year later, and that bike was fully cleaned, and it was fully put away. There's an important point about the involvement of a parent and the involvement of skin in the game, whether that's through dollars or time or choices. And I think that's one of the things we know most about school choice. When a parent makes that choice, they're putting skin in that game and they're getting more involved in their child's education. And so we want a system that allows that to happen, not that says you have to go here because that's where you live.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Elizabeth. Says, "What about the kids left in the crumbling IPS, Indianapolis Public School System, for example? I had an excellent public school education and believe the money should stay in the public schools. What is so wrong with the public schools that they are so distasteful and can't be fixed? What makes the problem insoluble, I guess, with public schools?" Tasha?
Yeah, I don't think that's what anyone is saying. I think we're just saying that public school is not the option for all kids. And if a parent feels like it's not the best option for their child, then by all means, they should have the right to take their child to another place. Public schools work well for a lot of kids. 96% of our kids in Indiana attend a traditional public school, and that's the way it should be. But for those parents who just want something different, then we feel like they should have that option. It's to say that school choice is important or that we should have school choice is in no way saying that traditional public schools are bad or that they're not a good option for some families.
The best school in the state is Seidner Academy, a public school for gifted and talented kids at the corner of Keystone and Kessler, right near where I live. And so this isn't about whether we want all kids to go to a different school system. The point here is it's an environment that's competitive. You ask why some public school systems aren't working. They don't have to work because they don't have any competitive environments, right? They don't have parents who have the freedom to choose because they can't afford to move or they can't afford private schools. And the point is to have an environment where we're okay with giving all families dollars to go to whatever works.
How about, you know, in terms of this, the other question of accountability, though, is should parents be held accountable to? I mean, should you be allowed, for example, to take a voucher and remove your child from a school that's got an A grade under the old system and move that child to one that's got a C or a D grade for a lower grade, just say a lower grade of any kind, for religious or other reasons? Should you be able to use public dollars for that purpose? Robert.
I think legislating parents' things is very tough, but I would say the following. If a parent takes his child out of a school that's A-rated, whether it be public, private, or charter, and go to a C-rated school, let's say, maybe their child was getting bullied.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the teacher was starting to berate the child, and the child wasn't getting the kind of learning environment that they needed. And this school is actually helping them thrive better, even though the school's graded at a different rate. The idea that testing is the determinant of what total quality is, I think, is a mistake that we've made in this state. It's one of the biggest mistakes we've made in this state. Education is a lot more holistic than just a test score.
Well, I get that. But ultimately, we are imposing grades and ratings, though, on schools and every part of the component. Then let's take it out. If take the school grade out and focus on the child. If the child moves from a school that is highly regarded to one that is less highly regarded, and the student's outcomes, test scores, all sorts of stuff, grades begin to drop, should that still be allowed with public dollars?
And so that's a worrying concern. The great thing about our current program that we have for the choice program is if it's 2 years and they're in a school that's not working for them, that school can't take any more new kids. If it were a traditional school, John, they'd be going there for 9 years before someone did anything about it. So I think we want accountability, but we want faster and more responsive accountability.
We are talking about school choice here on No Limits. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Hi. Well, my first question is why there doesn't seem to be a diverse or alternate guest representative on the program. And then just a few comments is I'm hearing some pretty transparent rhetoric that comes straight from the political advocates. And so to hear that you want to remove the politics from it, and yet I'm hearing the political rhetoric being stated in this program. So it's frustrating to hear that. And also that I just think the main problem with the schools and the most failing schools are just in the poorest neighborhoods, and that they've never gotten the resources. They need to get twice the resources as the suburban schools. And the main resistance to that is coming from the same people that are promoting, quote, choice. Those communities need to be invested in a very broad educational agenda that includes support for the parents, support for child care, before and after school care, and all that. So that's the gist.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call and the comments. I will answer, Thomas, before you jump off the line here. We do have State Superintendent of Public Instruction Glenda Rhett scheduled to be on the program, so you will get a different point of view at that point. We wanted, though, because this is School Choice Week, to focus on the issue of school choice. But we do appreciate your comment and your criticism.
Thank you.
Thank you. In terms of the other arguments advanced, Robert, I'll let you.
You know, it saddens me, frankly, to be honest with you. But look, if we think our school systems are doing so well right now, then why are our smartest kids ranked 20th in the world in math and 17th in science? We need to do better across the board. It's just that simple. And to say we need to throw more money at it, I think the question should be, what are we getting for our money? Since 1970, we've more than doubled after inflation the dollars in the classroom and dollars to schools, and test scores have remained flat. Now, let's not put it all on test scores, but you know, are we really saying that our system is working for all kids? And the answer is no, and it frustrates me that people don't understand. We need to do everything we can to change that.
We are talking about school choice in acknowledgement of National School Choice Week. My guests are Tasha Salyers of the Institute for Quality Education and Robert N. Lowe of the Friedman Foundation for Educational Choice. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about National School Choice Week today on No Limits. My guest now is Tasha Salyers. Robert N. Lowe had to leave to pick up his child from school, ironically. And if you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I should say that WFYI is a partner in the National American Graduate Initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. American Graduate shines a spotlight on the policies and practices that help children succeed from their earliest preschool days through high school graduation and transition to college and careers. Learn more at americangraduate.org. I also want to deal, we've gotten several tweets, some emails, and it was a point that Thomas made in his phone call saying that the representation here is one-sided in terms of the point of view. Again, we are having State Superintendent of Public Instruction Glenda Ritz on the program in a couple of weeks, and we're hoping to explore the other side of this question during that conversation. So I hope that may not satisfy your concerns, but that is the approach we're trying to take. We are trying to get both viewpoints a platform to express their views. We've gotten a tweet from Ryan who says, circumventing our secular constitution with vouchers is gutting our public schools and giving less choice to the poor and the handicapped. Tasha? Well, first, why don't we take the argument, I mean, gutting the secular constitution, you know, I'm presuming that Ryan, you're referring to the money that goes to schools that have a religious affiliation and violating the establishment clause of both the Indiana Constitution and U.S. Constitution.
Right, and we hear that a lot, John, and I would just say that, you know, the constitutionality of vouchers has been upheld throughout the country over and over again. And so that argument just doesn't hold weight in Indiana or in other states across the country.
It says, let me see, Twitter says gerrymandering is the only way vouchers will succeed. Is that a reference of if the person who tweeted that could follow up with another comment? But I'm presuming that the argument here is that because the Indiana General Assembly has a disproportionate representation of Republicans based on the votes cast by Hoosiers, that means that these policies are in place. Is there, has the support for vouchers been bipartisan here in the state, Tasha?
I think obviously we have a lot of support on one side of the aisle. But, you know, I think that's the case in Indiana. I think that, as Robert alluded to earlier, it's not the case all over the country, and increasingly more so. We see that school choice is a what we like to say, it's not a bipartisan issue, it's a nonpartisan issue. It should really just be about putting those political differences aside on this one thing. And, you know, getting back to sort of the topic that we started with at the top of the show, National School Choice Week. You know, it's not something that's exclusive to Indiana. Sometimes I think that, you know, we forget to kind of look around and see that, yes, while Indiana is leading the country in choice, we're only one of many states that's experiencing a large growth in choice and more support for it on all sides of the aisle.
We've gotten several several questions, and I'm going to, in the interest, because we've also got the phone lines backed up, try to synthesize these. A lot of questions saying, you know, really choice is not the problem or the solution here. The problem is poverty, and we haven't found the solution yet. That really choice does nothing to really address that underlying problem of poverty.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up. You know, that was something that a previous caller mentioned, that, you know, it's, I think he was alluding to the fact that it's sort of a simple equation, right? All of our bad schools are in poor neighborhoods. And I'd push back on that a little bit and say that that's not necessarily the case. You know, an example that we love to point to, Project Restore, is a program that was created by a couple of teachers in IPS. In a school that's 100% free and reduced lunch, they took that school from an F to an A in just a matter of a few years. They looked at each other, the teachers, and said, you know, this is something that we're going to have to do. We don't have a big parent buy-in right now. That's all changed. You know, I think since the parents have seen the level of commitment from the school, they've also reciprocated with a commitment to the school and to being in the involved parents that they need to be in their child's education. You know, it's important to remember that, you know, just because we can't paint with such a broad brush and say, well, this is really simple, right? Mm-hmm. Poor schools are bad. You know, suburban schools are good. It's not that simple. And so what choice does is it says, you know, regardless of where you live, let's, you know, regardless whether it's a good neighborhood or a bad neighborhood, every family in Indiana deserves to have multiple options to find the school that works best for their child.
We are talking about school choice here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Alyssa, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a 10-year-old daughter, and she is in a life skills classroom for special needs. And I'm not sure if I know if that group of kids has school of choice or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I'm so glad you called. Yes, right now in Indiana, the funding that your daughter would receive for her special services would follow her to any school that she wanted to attend. So you as the parent obviously would evaluate your options and choose the school that would have the best program to fit her needs. And then the state provides the funding to whichever school you choose to provide the services for her needs. And then if you'd like, another option available to parents is to send their child to a school outside of their traditional public school, but then still have the traditional public school provide those services and receive the funds for that, if that makes sense.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Jack, and if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jack says that we should have had someone from the other side, and we've already dealt with that, Jack. But your point is, given the fact that Republicans are constantly pushing hard for more funding of private schools and their avowed goal of starving government, it is hard to think their motives are totally above board. How much of this, you know, when we talk about the level of distrust, I mean, that's you know, sort of behind all of this, that we don't trust. How do you deal with that, Tasha?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked. So another person kind of alluded to that. And I'm always sort of taken back by that personally. I was a middle school teacher for 8 years, and I'm a mom of 3 girls. That's why I do the work that I do. And so, you know, I get accused of a lot of different things and being this or being that, or I keep waiting. I get told a lot that I'm in it for the money. I keep waiting for that big paycheck to come because I don't know. Maybe there's something I don't know about all of this. But, you know, and I think that Robert did a good job earlier of saying, and John, you mentioned that folks on both sides of the aisle really want to do what's best for kids. And I shouldn't say aisle, folks on both sides of this discussion. We just have different ways of going about it. Right. We have different ways of thinking about a system. And for me, and the reason, John, I got involved in this movement and in this work, coming from a traditional public school classroom, is, you know, for 8 years in my career, I heard this is the way it is and this is the way it has to be. And then you know, after 8 years of that, I was introduced to some folks that said, this is education as it is, but this is education as it could be. And I said, that's where I want to be. That's what I want to be doing, is rethinking the way that we educate kids in Indiana and thinking outside of the box, you know, and finding solutions that mean that kids can be as successful as possible, regardless of where they check in at the morning. You know, it doesn't matter to me if the outside of the building says charter school, traditional public school, private school. None of that matters, as long as within that school day, the kid is getting the services that they need and can be successful in life.
How much of this, though? I mean, in some ways, that spirit of innovation, that's how charter schools, you know, in effect started. They were supposed to be piloting approaches that then would be applied across the board to all traditional public schools. That has evolved now. The charter schools are supposed to exist, that the choice itself is, rather than being a means to an end, is an end to itself to some degree. Can you see the sort of frustration, I think, that folks on the other side of the question feel? Because to them, it almost feels like we were sold, you know, asked to buy one thing and we were sold something else.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I can appreciate that. And I think, you know, you're right. Charters sort of started as these are going to be these hubs of innovation, and we're going to do things in a whole new way. And in some cases, they are. You know, Carpe Diem here in Indianapolis is a great example of a really innovative charter school that's doing cool things for kids. You know, and then on the other side, you know, we've seen some charter schools, and we have some here in Indiana that are looking more and more like the traditional public schools that, you know, originally they were going to replace or to improve upon that model. So I'd say that, you know, our organization is interested in driving that innovative spirit, and that's something we still want to see in our charter community.
We are talking about school choice here on No Limits. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I had a question similar to what the answer that the woman just gave, in reference to if the teachers aren't teaching in a different manner in the charter school, then what's the point of the charter school? I don't understand it. My kids go to public schools. They both do very well because of their mother works with them. I think that's the majority of it. So I don't see where the charter school is better than a public school.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call and the question, David.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, and charters have grown. The movement has grown so fast. And I think probably we haven't done a really good job of keeping the public up on, you know, what exactly charter schools are. Charters have a lot more flexibility than your traditional public schools. They can do things.
Flexibility in what way?
Flexibility in, you know, length of the school day, number of school days, the way they might arrange their school day. You know, they can stop, you know, I'll give one example of a friend that I had that worked at a charter school. And at mid-year, Christmas break, they had a meeting and they said, okay, the way that we have the school day arranged for the kids just isn't working. Let's come together, put our heads together and come up with a different solution. So when the kids came back in January, they had a different schedule. They had, you know, block classes instead of what they had been doing the first semester. And so some of those charter schools can really stop mid-year, make adjustments, and just have a little more flexibility than you would have in your traditional public schools. That's really kind of the big difference. And, you know, and again, if your traditional public school is working well and you find yourself saying, well, I don't really see, like, what's the point of a charter school? Then it may not be for you, and that's okay.
Nina, welcome to the program.
Hello.
What's on your
mind?
What's on your mind?
I was wondering, I wrote a comment a couple weeks ago when we started this conversation about the pre-K situation. And why don't they just add pre-K to public schools and lower the dollar per head and put everybody's kids in schools? You get quality, quantity, and you can use money that you receive to put back into the school to make it better and fix infrastructure and give teachers better pay and make the school actually work instead of breaking it down like Mitch Daniels started doing right when he introduced the voucher program.
Thanks very much for the call, Nina.
Thank you.
Tasha.
Yeah, Nina, I think, you know, we share your concern for, you know, growing preschool program. I think that that's the direction we're definitely headed in Indiana. I think that, you know, everyone agrees that, you know, good quality education at any age is something that we need in Indiana. So, you know, I think we're getting there. You know, I think we've made some baby steps and we'll continue to grow and hopefully build on to what we have to ensure that, you know, beyond kindergarten, we start to give kids options even younger.
We've also gotten an email from a listener named Randy that I think speaks to part of Nina's point. Says, we value our teachers and the impact that they have on our children, but obviously not enough to pay them a wage equal to their importance. We are more willing to support a sports team than a school's teaching team. How much of this and the nature of this debate and the kind of tension, you know, the partisan discord that we've talked about here is a product of the fact that we just do not support education enough in this state, that we do not put enough money into it, period.
So, you know, first I'll say yes, I agree that, you know, we need to pay our better teachers, or let me put it this way, we need to pay our highly effective teachers more. You know, and to the second part of your comment, John, you know, in Indiana, we spend more than half. So I think we're around like 53% of our entire state budget. And if you add in higher ed, it's even more than that. So we're looking at like $8 billion for K-12 education in Indiana. So I would say, you know, at some point, I think we need to step back and take a good look at not so much how much money we're putting in, but how are we spending that money? Are we making good fiscal decisions with that money? You know, we mentioned some of the differences between charters and traditional pubs earlier. One of the differences is that charters every year are required to go through an auditing process, right, to look at how they're spending their money. Our traditional public schools don't have to do that. So, you know, $8 billion and no strings attached really to how well they're spending that money and if they're really putting it toward what's going to get us the best student outcomes.
And that probably will have to be the last word here. I don't think that that we can get another call in. I do want to say to all of our listeners that we really appreciate your participation. This conversation is going to continue because, as our commitment to American Graduate demonstrates, this is a discussion that we very much want to continue. My guests have been Tasha Salyers of the Institute for Quality Education, and for the first two-thirds of the program, Robert N. Lowe of the Friedman Foundation for Educational Choice. I'd like to thank both of you for joining us. Tasha, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
And I'd like to invite all of our listeners to come back on Thursday when we're going to talk about the Abraham Lincoln exhibit and gala at the Indiana State Museum. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive Producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.